Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and in studio with me this week is Lafayette Mayor Tony Roswarski. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Stan, for having me.
Appreciate your attendance as always. If you've got a question for Mayor Roswarski during the next half hour, call us at 496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org. You may tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. All of those are good ways to get questions in during the next half hour. I wanted to start with something that came up yesterday. It's a statewide issue but has local implications. Yesterday, the general counsel to Governor Pence said the state is not going to recognize the same-sex marriages that were performed last week from a state perspective. I wondered if there was a different take on that from a local perspective. How are you dealing with that decision, if at all?
Well, because there was such a short window there, it's not really had any impact on us here locally, you know, at this time as it proceeds through the court process and through each step of those appeals as it works its way, as I think we all believe that it will, to the Supreme Court eventually or in the near future. I don't think it's had a lot of impact from a government standpoint. Now, certainly for the people that got married or that are in limbo, that not sure how that ruling might affect certain benefits and things like them. I mean, there is certainly impact on individuals' lives. But as far as from a government standpoint or something that the city government is having to deal with or work through, it's not really had an effect on us at this time.
Will you have to deal with it from the point of view of benefits or something like that, especially if we get to the end of the year and people are doing things such as filing taxes or applying for other benefits, and it's still in the appeal process, which it seems likely to be by the end of the calendar year? Will you then have to address it in any sort of a way that affects your bottom line?
Well, those tax benefits and those things are really at the federal and state level. And so from a local property tax situation, it doesn't really affect that tax base because it's taxed on the assessed valuation of that property. And whoever owns that property, whether they're married, not married, single owner, joint owner, the property tax calculations, unlike paying your federal taxes and all those calculations, are done on whatever the assessed valuation is of that property and whether it is a home with a homestead credit or a rental unit who doesn't get a homestead credit or the mortgage exemption. So and, of course, that actually all, in fact, goes through the county government, through the county assessor's office, and then through the auditor. And actually, the city does not even calculate that. So I don't see those issues being profound here for the way the finances are done for local units of government because the calculations just don't have a lot of those.
I guess I was thinking more along the lines of something like health care because what can happen is individual entities such as the city or the university can say, we are going to recognize the same-sex benefits of if you've got one of the partners who works at Purdue or works in the city, for instance, and the other does not, is the other partner still covered? Is that a sort of thing that you're going to deal with?
Well, that'll be something that we'll deal with on a larger scale. The city of Lafayette is one of the 22 member cities of what's called the IACT Medical Trust, and we actually there's this large group of us that we all purchase our health insurance together to help try to save money, get some economy of scale, try to drive down and control rates, and also take those up and down spikes because, you know, a community by itself can have a bad year, and that can really hurt your rates. But when you're in a much larger pool, even if some people have a bad year but the rest of the pool might have a good year, it can nullify some of those spikes. So we actually buy our health insurance with other communities. So those decisions will be made in the context of all of us on that board representing those cities kind of making that decision together as far as, you know, recognizing same-sex marriages, how the coverage would work. And so it may be where we do have to deal with it and make those decisions going forward. But my sense of it would be that the group would wait for some more affirmative court decisions to be made to help, you know, help direct how we might do that so we stay within the legal context.
Has IACT, to your knowledge, taken any sort of a position on this issue?
You know, they haven't taken a position as an organization, but because they represent so many different cities and towns, there were mayors, you know, like myself, that did come out publicly against a House joint resolution that was going before the legislature earlier in the year that eventually died. But IACT itself as an organization, because it does represent so many different communities, did not take an actual position.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. We're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Roswarski. You can call us at 496-1999. Our phone lines are open. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. We actually have received an email question from Leslie Sharp, who asks, how does the mayor feel about the Lafayette Civil Service Commission's decision to override the recommendation of the police chief as well as the rest of the police department to fire Mr. Davidson for what she says his clear violation of police policy and abuse of authority? She says this decision has reflected very poorly on this community, and I personally would like to know how they got the authority to make decisions out of their realm of comprehension and knowledge, again, her words, as well as what other decisions this commission makes that affect my daily life in Lafayette.
Okay. Well, the city of Lafayette is a second-class city, so by state law, we have a civil service commission, a merit board. There's been a merit board in Lafayette since 1977, so this is not anything new in the community. So I think if I'll give you a little bit of background before I answer some of the specifics there. So there's been a merit board in the community for a long time, and the reason the merit boards were created, and I think they are a very, very good process in the community, even if I disagree this time with their final decision, is they're created to take politics, favoritism, you know, somebody being friends with somebody to get promoted, to get certain positions within the department. They help remove some of that, and they also give five citizens an opportunity to participate in setting standards and promotions and hiring and firings within an organization, so it doesn't just become ingrained within the police organization and within the police culture. So it's a way of actually engaging the community in being involved. And so by state law, they hire, they fire, and they do certain levels of discipline, and they also help set requirements for promotional exams and different things like that. The chief of police, the Chief Flannelly, if he recommends any discipline that's larger than 5 days suspended with no pay, the merit board has to do it. The chief of police cannot fire a policeman. He can only make, under the state law, he can only make a recommendation to the merit board to terminate a policeman or demote a policeman or suspend them for more than 5 days without pay. That's the length of his authority without these five civilians who have to live within the city limits of Lafayette for at least 3 years before they can be on the board. And so they really are a part of the community. So they promote. The chief cannot just pick a sergeant, pick a lieutenant, pick the captain. I cannot. The only person I actually appoint to the Lafayette Police Department is the chief of police. By state law, I get one appointee to the police department, and that's the chief's position. So all the other promotions have to go through this five-member civilian merit board. And I want to say again, it's a good process because it allows the citizens to be involved. The police department has input, but it does take, you know, in the old days before their merit board, when the mayor's office would change, you know, all the sergeants might change in the whole department, all the lieutenants and people in his political party came in and got all those supervision jobs. The merit board's goal is to only put in there the most qualified person for the job that they feel will do the best job, regardless of political affiliation or who you know in the community or who your family is, you know, is to take all of that out of it. And so overall, I think it's been very successful in doing that and keeping that checks and balances within the organization. On this particular case, which is very unusual, the merit board, chose not to follow the chief of police's recommendation and the other commanding officers, and a recommendation that I've already said publicly in the newspaper and on TV that I fully supported the recommendation of termination. I felt the actions did not reflect our agency, our standards, and that termination was the proper request by the chief. The officer has the right then to request a hearing. Basically, it's a trial. He has the right to an attorney. And there was a lengthy hearing, lasted almost 5 hours of testimony going back and forth and different people testifying. And at the end of the day, it was a split. They all agreed that it was conduct unbecoming. Three of them did not agree on termination for the use of force. Two of them did feel that it should be termination. So it was a split there. And again, I don't agree with that decision, but the fact is the process worked. I mean, there was input from the police department and five citizens, your neighbors, people that live in our neighborhoods that helped set the standard, debated this back and forth for hours to try to reach a decision. So even though everybody may not, and it's, you know, you've probably looked at the media, different letters, the editor, some people support the officer, some people don't support the officer. Some people on the merit board thought he should be fired, some people didn't. So, you know, in fact, you know, maybe the merit board reflects some of that sentiment in the community that goes both directions. That's why you have five people looking at it.
Leslie, thanks for your question. You can get us questions by emailing ask@wbaa.org, tweeting your questions to @WBAAnews, or calling us at 496-1999. You and John Dennis have advocated the creation of this single-entry homelessness resource center. I wondered, the money to fund that sort of thing, where are you going to find it? How much do you think it might cost? Have you gotten to that point in your thinking yet?
I mean, we're not to the final cost of those yet. Obviously, United Way is working with us and would be a big piece of that, because United Way funds, decent portions, different levels of the budgets of many of the organizations that would be involved with that. And then the city, through our CDBG funds, and then actually home funds for some of the organizations, we supply a significant amount of the money that goes into some of those organizations already, so more for some than others. So we would be looking at how we allocate some of those resources. But we know we have to do something. And to give you an example, this year during the CDBG hearings, the various organizations that apply to the city for money, their requests came in double the amount of money this time that we actually had to give out. It was double what they asked for. So, you know, we know that we have got to continue to look and help facilitate efficiencies, cooperation within the organizations, which they do work together, but we have to continue to find ways. And then for this people that need services, you know, we know that there are people that are falling through the cracks, people that aren't getting the services as quickly as we would like them to get those. And we really want to try to hit on the prevention, too. How do you catch these folks quick enough that you prevent them from being homelessness or to getting in to entrenched homelessness? And how are we making sure that they're getting the services that they need in a timely manner? And so, you know, we started a kind of a mini version of it right now with transitional housing, triaging these people as they come in. And you know, the first few months already make us believe that it's successful. And if we can get to a full-scale, single point of entry engagement center, we can do it in a more efficient manner, that because there's only a certain amount of money out there to fund all the services that need to fund it. But we can also help and improve the lives of the people that need the help much quicker and, I think, better.
Well, let me ask you, I wonder if you think you're going to have to do any convincing of people. There was a downtown business some time ago that was feeding people for free on Thursdays. There was another nearby business that, for lack of a better way to put it, kind of raised a stink about that. The free meals stopped. I wonder if you think Lafayette has something of a reputation in its business community or in general for kind of helping the homeless only in fits and starts, because there's clearly been people who have gone the extra mile to do it, and there are people who have been saying, this is hurting me more than it's helping me. And so there's been some services, then there's been a void of services. Now we're talking about increasing those services again. What kind of convincing are you going to have to do broadly to especially the businesses that this agency might be situated near?
I think that people in this community are very giving, and I think they're very open to helping serve the poor, helping serve the homeless, making sure that people have the services they need with accountability and with, you know, benchmarks and outcomes that need to be set to move people that have the capability to be self-sufficient, to move them to self-sufficiency. There are some people we know that because of mental illness and things they're going to be long-term homeless. I mean, we need to get them into permanent supportive housing with wraparound case management and stabilize them the best that we can. But I think if we come up with a model that people really see the advantage to and can see that there are measurable outcomes that are better than there are now, I think people will buy into that, and that they see that coordinated effort. And I think that's why you've seen myself, Mayor Dennis, and Commissioner Murtaugh, along with the director of the United Way and the United Way's executive board, endorse this process that we're looking at, because I think everybody realizes doing things just the way we are now, or like you said, that sometimes can get fragmented and disjointed or not as consistent, and maybe lapping over what somebody else is doing, and we're not doing it in a way that's actually moving us towards that ultimate goal at the end. I think people will buy into that. I think we just have to have a model that we can appropriately sell, and this study and these meetings that will take place, I think, are a good avenue for that. You know, we did the Solutions Beyond Shelters a couple years ago, and we did all the charrettes, and we brought all the groups together and looked at a plan on how do we end homelessness in Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County within the next 10 years. But the reality is, you know, we haven't made much progress on that. And we think this engagement center and tweaking this model, you know, really might help us be the catalyst to, you know, really start to make some progress.
I want to get to our first phone call of the afternoon. We have Vince on the line. Vince, good afternoon. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to ask the mayor?
Oh, Mayor knows me. How you doing? I just complimented a sewer worker today on how good I think the services are in the community. I know I've talked to you before about this, and it's kind of been my broken record for the last few months. And I guess I'll give it the tagline. What kid are we going to have the sticker for next? And I'm referring to the number 51 stickers we have all over town. But distracted and aggressive driving just seems exponential in the last 20 months. I think I've told you before, or told some other police officers when I've run into them, I've all but stopped riding bicycle anymore. I used to ride hundreds of miles a year, and I went out for my first ride in a number of months on Sunday on North 9th Street and had a vehicle disregard a stop sign, and I had to take evasive action. We've got moms on cell phones. None of them want to admit that they're the ones doing it, but I keep saying we're just waiting for the next tragedy, for when everyone wants to put another sticker on the back of their car, but we're all putting our head in the sand about it.
Thanks, Vince, for your call, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody would, and Vince, thank you for complimenting on the city services and the sewer employee. We appreciate that. And I don't think anybody would argue that distracted driving is certainly extremely dangerous. And there are campaigns out there, but the reality is, I think Vince is right that people continue to do it. I don't think it's decreasing. Local governments cannot create an ordinance that overrides the authority that we have from the state. And so, you know, laws pertaining to distracted driving, driving while intoxicated, and those things have to go through the legislature. There's been some push to, you know, look at hands-free. You know, many states have went to a total hands-free type situation, and I think that's worthy of discussion. I think we continue to see large numbers of accidents that are attributed to distracted driving, and I think that's a discussion that needs to continue within the state legislature, because I don't think it's decreasing, and we do want to be a pedestrian-friendly, a bicycle-friendly community. We're working on a new bike pedestrian plan right now. We put in trails, but people have to cross streets, and we want that to be safe. And I think it is an issue that Indiana is going to have to continue to look at in the future and probably take a stronger stand on.
I'll say we also have an emailed question. Someone wants to know about whether there are going to be bike paths made for the north side as well. Well, that would seem to go to Vince's question, too. They say that they're excited that there are now bike paths around the city. I wonder if they mean bike lanes as much as bike paths, because that's, of course, a couple of different things, but different ways to be biking either away from traffic or within it more safely.
Well, I think to answer, if I'm reading the question right there, I think the best way to answer that is we have a trail master plan. So if they're talking about actually 10-foot wide hiking, biking, multi-use trails, we have a trail master plan. We have about 18 miles of trails paved in Lafayette right now, and we'll have about 25 by the end of next 2 years. There'll actually be a trail along Sagamore Parkway when we complete that, because it's no longer going to be a state highway, and we're going to design it much differently. There'll be a trail down Earl Avenue, if they're kind of talking about the north end of Lafayette, and that will tie into the trail along Greenbush Street that ties into the trail in Munger Park, which we're tying in on Union Street, and then back to Earl Avenue. You'll actually be able to get from Jeff High School on a trail all the way over to Munger Park in the north end of Lafayette. And then there are some other with 52 and then down towards Underwood Street. So there are some trails inside the city limits. If it's out in the county, the answer to that is yes. Through the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation, we have a plan to extend a trail along North River Road from West Lafayette out to the amphitheater, over to Davis Ferry Bridge, across the Davis Ferry Bridge area, then back in 9th Street, back into the Wabash River Heritage Trail down by the Lafayette Old Golf Course, and also create a link there on the West Lafayette and Lafayette side to get you off 52 down to that trail. And the NDOT has worked with us, so when they replace the 52 bridge, the 52 bridge will actually have a trail section for bicycles that will meet up with R2 entrance points. So there are some plans. So if they were talking about the north end of the county, that's what I know about the north end of the county. Talk about the north end of Lafayette, absolutely. And there's a new piece going in up by Columbian Park yet this summer, and we'll be linking Columbian Park to Sunnyside School, to Murdoch School, to Murdoch Park, and then back to Columbian Park.
Another question comes in from Shelley Taylor via email. She says, is there a possibility of changing the ordinance for fireworks to decrease the number of days that they're allowed? She says, I'm someone who has to be in bed before sunset, as are other quote-unquote odd shift workers. She says, there are also difficulties for soldiers who have been in battle and returned and have PTSD. We ran a story on that last week in our newscasts. Any chance on changing that fireworks ordinance, she wants to know?
Unfortunately not. If we could get the state legislature, the Lafayette City's fireworks ordinance is the most restrictive allowed by state law. There is a state law that sets you can make one that's less restrictive, but if you're going to make one, that's as restrictive as they will allow it to make those days. I feel very confident that if the state gave us the leeway to make it more restrictive, I would support that. And I feel I can't speak for my city council directly, but I can tell you from indirect conversations with them, they would support a stricter fireworks ordinance. But state law does not allow us to reduce the number of days any more than they are. That's the least number of days allowed by state law. So we would welcome the opportunity for each community to be able to set their own based on what their community wants without the state, you know, quite frankly, telling us what we can and can't do on that.
But let me ask real quick about enforcement, because I know in my neighborhood there were still fireworks going off last evening, and I'm sure we've got to be outside of – outside of the ordinance?
I think July 10th, today, 11th. We're getting close to we're getting close to the end, but we're not out of it yet, or this might be the cutoff right now. There's this pretty – wide open window around the 4th of July that you can do the fireworks.
Okay. I want to get to one more caller in just our last couple of minutes here. Zachary is on the phone. Zach, question real quick for Mayor Roswarski, please.
Yes. I just want to say thank you for this great show. Thanks, Mayor. Real quick, how effective are land use plans in their process, particularly creating strategic plans for a neighborhood, in regards to handling disagreements in direction, like what we're seeing with the Centennial neighborhood and the Clear River Church?
Well, I think, land use plans, I think, are important. I think zoning plans are important. I think, you know, with community and neighborhood input, as we look at the direction of a community and a neighborhood and what we want that to look like, not only now, but in the future, and how that ties into other planning processes that are in the community. I understand it's not always easy, and not everybody always agrees exactly on how that should look. And that sometimes there are economic factors that take place that come into play in that. You know, we're working with Centennial Neighborhood right now to get in the Centennial Townhomes, which was a joint effort between the neighborhood, City of Lafayette, and Lafayette Urban Enterprise Zone. You just got to continue to build those process, work through those plans to come up with the best outcomes that you can.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
We look forward to doing it again next month. Please do join us next week as well for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. If you've got a question for Frankfort's mayor, or indeed any of our mayors in advance of those shows, you can email us at ask@wbaa.org. You can send your questions to our Twitter handle as well. We're @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. This has been Ask the Mayor. Have a nice afternoon, everybody.